It's time for Batter Up, the definitive Atlanta Braves podcast with host Joe Patrick and Caleb Johnson, giving you exclusive insight into our Braves from Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Here's Joe and Caleb.
Welcome into Batter Up on this Monday, October 25th, a monumental day. Well, not really, today isn't, but it's just the fact that we get to talk about, I get to say these words, Joe Patrick, the Atlanta yes. Braves are going to the World Series. Like, it just feels absolutely insane. Caleb Johnson in with my co-host, Joe Patrick. Joe, how does hearing that sound?
It's crazy. It's nostalgic, honestly. It reminds me of being a kid, because I don't know when you were born, Caleb, but some of my earliest sports memories were, well, my family had just moved to Georgia when they won the 95 World Series. We had moved here the year before that, and of course baseball was on strike the year before. So that was kind of like one of my first baseball memories, Braves memories certainly. And then of course they were pretty much in the World Series pretty regularly at that point, you know, and they went back in 96 and had a heartbreaker, and then in 99 was obviously the last time they were there. So, you know, just hearing those words reminds me of that time in my life when I was just a little innocent kid. And man, it feels so good to be back, and I'm so happy for all the other little kids who now get to experience this moment for themselves. It's really an exciting time here in Atlanta with all the sporting success that seemingly every team is having right now. And it's I feel privileged, and I'm sure you feel the same, just to kind of be covering a team that's kind of at the forefront of all that success. So just couldn't be more excited for what's going on.
Yeah, so I don't have memories of the 95 World Series. My memories come in the form of just like memorabilia and things that I have just kept over the years, you know, things that people have given me and that I've found places. But I do have memory of 99, which I was still very, very young. But I remember the excitement, and I still have a hat around here somewhere after they won the National League pennant. And it is beat up and worn in, because I remember, like, I wore it all the time as a kid. And I also remember the extreme disappointment of how that all finished. Mm-hmm. I say that to say, one of the things I feel like, with a lot of things that we'll get to talk about in our show today, is just this idea of this is coming at a different time for Braves fans. Like, you talk about that era of the 90s where the Braves were in it. It felt like, you know, every other year from what, 91 right. on, it was just like the Braves were competitive and in this thing. And while the Braves have been competitive the last few years, there's just been a difference. Like, there has been the show that we did before this was wondering, all right, can the Braves get over that inevitable hump, that roadblock in the way that seems so impossible, or are they going to revert to old Atlanta habits and mess things up? Well, so like that is in the past. And so I think part of this experience that is enjoyable to this point and is going to continue to be enjoyable is there's a level of content that I have with what this team has accomplished that wasn't going to exist if they lost the Dodgers series.
Mm-hmm.
If they
mm-hmm.
lost the Dodgers series, there was just going to be something in the back of my mind that was kind of like, man, what could have been? And
yeah.
and man, you know, is this team just another Atlanta team that becomes hard to root for because they just don't quite get there? Now, I don't want to take anything away from the fact, like, I want a ring. I want a championship.
Yeah.
I want a parade down Peachtree. But before we get into the series, it's just I wanted to put it out there that I have this feeling of resolve and, like, happiness that just came so sweet, not only Saturday night, but also in a Sunday afternoon Waffle House meal that I had that just tasted incredible.
Extra sweet on a victory Sunday morning for sure.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was just such a big day. I was going to say something, and I totally forgot what it was. But what were you just talking about?
Just this overall feeling of I am content. I am happy with this point that the Braves have reached.
It's something I thought about after the game, in the wake of them advancing to the World Series, is just how remarkable it's been for this organization to incrementally improve in a very steady way, step by step, since they won the division in 2018. They won the division in 2018, obviously, the upstart team. Nobody expected them to do what they did in winning the NL East that year. But then they didn't get swept out of the NLDS, but they got roundly beaten by the Dodgers, and by a much better Dodgers team, to be quite frank about it. But you still, like, that was obviously a positive season to have that, to kind of elevate yourself in that way. 2019, you have a much more dominant regular season. You win, I think, 97 games. They could have won more, but they decided to rest some players toward the end. Have a tough battle with the Cardinals, obviously. Goes to 5 games in the NLDS. We all know how that one ended up, but I still think you would definitely consider that an improvement on the season before, although you didn't advance, you know, past the NLDS round. Then in 2020, once again, you win the division pretty soundly. You go in with the expectation that you need to now advance in the playoffs. Like, there's no, like, just, you know, having a competitive series is not going to cut it. You do that, and it was a different playoff, so you beat the Reds, then you beat the Marlins. Two teams that you probably would have expected to beat anyway, as it was. Like, I think that in the Cardinals series in 2019 was a lot more evenly matched than, you know, last year the Braves were pretty heavily favored against both the Reds and the Marlins at that point. Mm-hmm. And then you obviously pushed the Dodgers to the brink in the NLCS. So again, another positive step. But that one ended a little sour because you lost to the Dodgers team that beaten you in 2018. The fact that you had them on the ropes up 3-1 and you had people, us in particular, excited that you were going to go to the World Series that year, that left you with an obvious disappointment. So then this year, another challenge. You know, you don't actually win the division as dominant a fashion as you had in prior years, but you go into the playoffs with a certain kind of pedigree that allows you to, that propels you to beat a really good team that won the NL Central wire to wire in the Milwaukee Brewers, which I feel like it is now getting kind of swept under the rug, like how impressive the Braves were in that series to beat a team that good. And then obviously then to beat the Dodgers, the giant that has knocked you out a couple times, kind of the bully in the NL East with the amount of money that they are able to spend on their roster. You vanquish them as well. So I think that all these things, now you're in the World Series. So once again, another progression in terms of how you do in the playoffs, but also that kind of sweetness of having beaten the Dodgers to do it. I think there's some, it's kind of poetic that that has happened this way. And I think that that's why it does create this kind of euphoric feeling. And this is going to kind of maybe throw us off topic, but I was like, you know, if they had Acuña, man, like how good would this team be with Ronald Acuña Jr. out there? You could have, I mean, we could imagine any myriad kinds of lineups and things like that. But man, just what an awesome season it's been. And yeah, for as much as we all want to win it, and yeah, have that trophy presentation, like you said there, Caleb, I think we can all be happy with what this team has accomplished. I think that everybody is just super proud of this team and where they are right now.
Absolutely. So, and I can attest to that just from the pure fact of a line that I was standing in yesterday afternoon, a day after the Braves clinch game 6 and are going to a World Series. There was a line of 100 people or so standing outside of the team store at the stadium with another 100 or so inside there. Everybody's buying team gear. I saw all kinds of pictures on social media yesterday with people lining up at Dick's and Academy Sports and buying gear before it was even put on the shelves. Like, they just opened the boxes and were selling stuff. Like there's just, there's a level of pride for me yesterday to be able to go buy a World Series Braves hat that's not from the year 1995.
Right, yeah.
You know, I think there is just, there's something to that when you're a fan of a team that at least the Braves can claim their title, their World Series, their one championship that the city has had. And we've been clinging to it for so long. And so I think just to have the opportunity to add on to that counts for so much. And that is really where the excitement level is. And here's the thing that we can kind of spur off of this is in a year where it's not their year. It's right. Not the Braves' time. The Atlanta Braves are missing Ronald Acuna Jr. They are missing Marcell Ozuna. They are missing Mike Soroka. They were kind of hobbling and trying to figure out their way through the postseason, losing guys left and right in the postseason. You know, Jorge Soler, Oscar Ynoa. I know I'm forgetting one. But
Travis Darno, well, I mean, this wasn't in the postseason, but losing Travis Darno during the regular season.
Travis Darno
so
early
long.
In the season. Yeah. Like, there's been so many reasonable excuses of, yeah, we'll see you next year kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so that is what makes this moment that more gratifying. And the fact of, and we can get into it now, Game 6 itself was a true roller coaster of emotions and a true test of something I wasn't sure the Braves had this year, which was your back isn't up against the wall, but you need to get it done right now. And
the killer instinct. Yeah.
And it's not going to be a cakewalk. Like I think something well, you and I hadn't gotten to it because it hadn't happened yet, but I was producing for Thomas Mott this weekend, and there was something to the fact that the Houston Astros clinched their series, their trip to the World Series, by winning 5-0. Like, there maybe have been moments, there were moments in that game where it felt close, but nothing to the effect of the, especially 7, 8, and 9, for this Braves team in that Game 6, you being there, what was that like, just kind of witnessing it all slowly going down piece by piece by piece?
Well, I'd like to start just before the game even started, actually.
Sure.
when discussing this, because we can't give enough credit to the fans that were there that created an atmosphere.
The sterile mall?
The sterile mall. That's right. Tyler Mazick had a good dig at Plashy after the game about that. It was just incredible. The buzz in and around the stadium, even just walking in from the outside, it felt so huge. There were so many aspects to it, to me at least, even just like the aesthetics of it being dark when the game starts and just seeing, I think that kind of stuff adds to this kind of, this electricity that seems to be pulsing through everybody. And then you get inside the stadium and you see that it's packed already inside the stadium with so much time still left to go before first pitch. People were just so amped up for it. And it was great to see a team that came out and delivered to those expectations, you know, with Austin Riley having that ground rule double in the first inning that put the Braves on the board early. I thought that was important. But yeah, I just wanted to first of all give a shout out to the crowd who was there in every, it was like a full stadium. I was looking in the outfield seats and obviously down the lines, like almost every seat was full 30 minutes before first pitch, which you almost never see. But I think, yeah, again, because of the time and everything, it was just great to see that. And I'm sure it made for even better visual on TV as well. Funny story, I actually was sitting next to this all series next to a really lovely Japanese man who was sending the feed to Tokyo to broadcast the game in Japan, and he was like showing me like the pictures that they were shooting from like the outside of the stadium, and they had somebody with a camera walking around in the corridors of Truist Park, just like capturing all the fans, and that's cool. Like that's like you're broadcasting yourself to the world when you go out there and rep your team like that. So first of all, just wanted to kind of set the scene and just give people so much credit for that. But and then the game just totally lived up to it, and just a thrilling game. Eddie Rosario, another huge game that added to his historic series. Obviously, that home run would just kind of sent shockwaves.
Yeah, that was one of those moments that, and having it be Eddie Rosario, isn't that so perfect?
Mm.
Like the fact that, sure, Freddie, you know, essentially, like, he's the one that catapulted this team into the series against the Dodgers with that eighth inning home run. But just the fact that it's someone you don't really expect, who wasn't even necessarily a big part of this team, even after he was traded for. Like just him being in the lineup, I can't tell you how many times I was thinking, like, hey, Snit, you sure about Eddie Rosario out and left? Like, you sure you don't want to, you know, you don't want to do something different? I mean, you traded for four outfielders. You sure this is the look that you want to get? And because, I mean, the power hadn't really been there for him all year. And just to come through all series long. And of course, in one of the, you know, the bigger moments, I know it was early on in that game, but I don't know about you, just watching at home, once that home run was hit, it became, okay, this is a reality. This is a real thing. Like, sure, Cody Bellinger can, for sure, in the seventh or eighth, come up and hit a three-run shot and take this all away, but this feels possible.
At that point, it was the Braves game to lose, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, no Braves fan would tell you they were, like, super confident that they weren't going to lose it at that point. Like, I think everybody could foresee something, like you were just describing, like some, you know, big Cody Bellinger home run or something at the end screwing
well,
up.
Or Chris Taylor, because, you know, it definitely felt like his series as well.
Right. No, yeah, no doubt. And we'll get to the whole seventh inning in just a second. But, yeah, I mean, like, just a, you know, continue on with Eddie Rosario, just what a freaking legend the guy is. Like, he will be a legend in, you know, Braves fans' memories forever, despite the fact that he was the fourth outfielder that the Braves had brought in. And I think, like, because of that reason, the fact that he was literally the fourth outfielder of three outfield spots, nobody could have expected that he was going to play such a big part in such a big moment of the Braves season. Mm-hmm. I mean, even when we were talking about that trade deadline, he was more of an afterthought in our conversations. You know, a lot of our conversations were revolving around the impacts that guys like Adam Duvall was going to have coming back. And of course, like, all, you know, all these players obviously had big impacts. Jorge Soler, another one, of course. But, you know, Eddie Rosario, nobody, like, he was kind of an afterthought, especially, you know, and the Indians were willing to just essentially salary dump him. Like, you know, that we traded Pablo Sandoval for him, who they immediately cut. You know, like, they didn't even care. They were just trying to get him off the roster.
Yeah, well, and also for the fact of, I mean, he has no ties to the Braves beyond this season. And we kept talking about, well, the Braves have to trade for guys who are going to be here longer than this year. Because we kept going, this season doesn't really matter, you know?
Mm-hmm, like, right, yeah.
Like, it'll, whatever happens, it's great, that's fine, it was wonderful. But no, the Braves really need to focus on guys who are going to be attached to this club beyond this year. And so seeing his name when he was traded for was like, oh, this rental, all right, well, I guess they want to be prepared in case somebody else goes down.
Right, right. And I mean, he was hurt at the time. He wasn't even going to be able to play for about a month. And then when he was able to play, you know, Alex Anthopoulos was talking about this to some of us who were around him after the Braves clinched the division against the Phillies, saying that, you know, they really didn't feel a pressure to bring him up necessarily to make some big impact because he was, you know, you don't want to say surplus to requirements, but he was just kind of like an extra weapon, essentially. And so they were just very willing to have him stay down Gwinnett, get your reps, you know, just keep hitting, keep, you know, just keep getting yourself in a rhythm, and your time is going to come at some point. And clearly it did. And he's made the most of it here in the playoffs. Again, it's just incredible what he's been able to do, hitting the ball hard almost every single time he's up to bat. Even some outs he's made are loud outs.
Yeah.
So obviously, and just a truly historic performance, 14 hits in the NLCS, which is a Braves franchise record that ties a major league record for the most hits in a playoff series. But he's the only one who did that in six games. So he does still stand in a league of his own in baseball history in that respect. And then obviously he's had, you know, not only, well, whenever you get that many hits, a lot of them are going to be important, but clearly his hits in this series with the game two hit that walked it off up the middle against, what was that, Gratterall? I think, I can't remember if it was Gratterall or Kenley Jansen pitching, but either way, against a really good pitcher for the Dodgers. And then obviously that big three-run homer in game six that proved to be decisive. Man, just... And, you know, he's so humble, too, you know, because, like, he didn't expect to be in this position either. So... it was just great seeing him after the game kind of holding the trophy and talking to everybody. I think he was kind of in dreamland. Like, he couldn't even believe that all this was happening to him. But just a great, great story.
Well, and it's funny, too, in that he is the second Braves player who wasn't a part of a, like, the main core to come in and win a National League Championship Series MVP. And he's also the second Eddie to do it, with Eddie Perez doing it in 1999. And when that clicked with me, then I was like, oh, man, that's right. Like, I feel like there keeps being moments happening for the Braves this year that's like, wow, how poetic and, like, how unique that this is actually working out like this and kind of coming together, that you have Eddie Rosario following Eddie Perez, you know, who did it the last time the Braves went for a World Series.
So then in game six, so Eddie Rosario hits the homer, and then Brian Snicker, well, actually, he had already made this decision before Eddie Rosario hit the homer, just before. But this is something I wanted to talk to you about, was he made the decision that takes some onions to remove Ian Anderson from the game. Pinch hit for him for Errey Adrianza, who hit a double. And A.J. Minter comes in and provides two massive innings for the Braves. And, you know, there are so many stories for individuals on this team. We just talked about Eddie Rosario. We're going to talk about Tyler Matzek in a bit. But I did just want to kind of single out A.J. Minter, too, because I feel like the innings he pitched in this game might end up eventually being swept under the rug because of these two guys. Yeah. But in the context of that game, to come in and be as dominant as he was, and really to have been as dominant as he has been in this whole series, is remarkable, because he's a guy who was demoted in the middle of the season, was sent down to Gwinnett, which is not the first time that this has happened to him in the middle of a season. And he talked really candidly after the game about his experience. And I just thought it was remarkable. He said, you know, I've failed this team and I've failed these fans so many times in my career. And that's what I was thinking about. I wanted to go out and do it for them. And man, it says so much. It, like, makes you almost, like, well up a little bit, because, you know, you just feel for a guy who's been through those kinds of mental wars. And to come out and perform the way he did in that big time moment was so clutch. I mean, it was necessary for this team, where Brian Snicker, I'm sure, felt like he needed to rely on fewer members of his bullpen to go out there and give him, you know, longer stretches during the game. And to be able to pull Ian Anderson after four innings, when things were kind of going south for him, he was kind of deteriorating as his start went on. Although I don't think the damage hadn't really been done yet. So I don't know if many people would have resorted to doing what Snit did and pinch hitting for him in that situation. Yeah, I can't just speak enough about what AJ Minter said. And also, you know, one of the things he mentioned talking about failure, by the way, was, you know, he says a lot of players on this Braves roster, everybody has been through failures at some point or another. And that is really what has built the resilience in them individually and collectively as a team to be able to bounce back from so many road bumps that they've hit throughout the season.
Yeah. Well, and I was thinking, you were talking about the fact that AJ Minter's innings could be overlooked in the grand scheme of things, and I was thinking, yeah, they will, because it's different than last year when he was expected to pitch that game five, and there was a lot more pressure. Well, it seemed like there was a lot more pressure for him to perform in that moment, and he actually did really well in that game. Yeah. And yet it didn't matter because, you know, the Braves lost. Mm-hmm. So to come in that, I loved the decision to pull Ian Anderson because it just felt like, well, I hated it in the moment because Ian was dominating, and who do we see? Adrianza coming up to the plate as the pinch hit choice. And I mean,
with two outs, I want to say.
Yeah. And what have we seen from Adrianza, I don't know, 90% of this postseason and just the end of the season in general? Like, nothing impressive, nothing yeah. exciting. Did he even have a hit before this?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
That's no. He had not had a hit since, since September 1st.
Wow.
No. Wow. Okay, sorry.
October
Not September.
1st?
Yeah, October 1st.
Okay. Still.
Still. Really long time. The Mets series is the last time that he had a hit. And he had been going pinch hit, pinch hit, pinch hit, pinch hit all postseason without a hit, without a walk. Like, these are straight up. Like, he did nothing. Mm-hmm. And so to see him step up in that moment, yeah, it was very much one of those like, oh, cool. So we're just wasting not only a pinch hitter, but also wasting whatever's left of Ian Anderson.
Because you had Travis d'Arnaud on first base. And when Adrianza hit that double, I think a lot of people were expecting that, not kind of realizing that it was d'Arnaud on first, kind of expecting them to round the base and score. And and then Wash threw up the hold sign. And everybody was like, what the hell?
Well, so, yeah, Ron Washington's getting a ton of credit, and he should for the development part. I've kind of questioned some of his base running calls in this postseason, and that was another one that, I'll be honest with you, I was screaming at my TV until I saw the replay. I was like, oh, yeah. Travis, yeah, he was going to get thrown out by a mile.
He was rumbling, bumbling, stumbling around the base.
Yeah, because he's a slow guy.
He's a catcher.
You know?
He's a catcher.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But incredible decision to get him to stop there. But it just felt like the way that the series had been going, the way that game had been going, that, okay, well, you got him to third, and you're going to end up leaving him on base, aren't you?
Yeah.
Aren't you?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Just and so I think that was what it made it even sweeter, was just the fact that it wasn't a wasted at-bat with Adrianza, and you were able to add some run support.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And then obviously, so we get to the seventh inning. Luke Jackson gets into a whole big old mess.
Do you question Luke coming in? Because I feel like everybody now, of course, wants to play revisionist history,
right.
And go, oh, why were you throwing? You saw what he did the last game,
right?
And do you question it at all?
So I don't question it unless if Snit had just sent Matzik out there for the seventh and told Matzik straight up, you're pitching the seventh and the eighth tonight, then I would be understanding of that. And I guess that's in revisionist history, like that's what people would have wanted.
Sure.
But I think that realistically you have to expect you're going to throw one guy for the seventh, you're going to throw a different guy for the eighth, and you're going to go 7-8-9 with three different relievers, as is typical. And so for that reason, I didn't have any issue with it being Luke Jackson. I mean, throughout the year, he's been that guy. He's been pitching either the seventh or the eighth inning all year long. Of course, there are obvious reasons why people would say, yeah, but this is different, because he's just coming off of giving up that huge home run to Cody Bellinger. And it's pretty clear at this point that the Dodgers kind of have something on Luke. Like, they're just able to hit him really well. He even said that after the game, talking to a reporter, saying, he's like, for whatever reason, the Dodgers like have something on me. I got to figure that out at some point. But so I understand that. But in general, I mean, he's kind of your guy. I think, you know, I was talking with a friend after the game, and he brought up a good point, which was maybe that Snit should have thrown Luke in game five of that Dodgers game where they were getting blown out. That way you could have given him an opportunity to go in a very low leverage situation where you're just trying to get him some good vibes going again. Mm-hmm. Knowing that you have an off day that's a travel day the next day where his arm isn't going to be used, of course, and you would have him ready then with a day of rest to pitch in game six. I think that may have been the smart move, but instead Snit decided to essentially rest all of his bullpen arms in that game five. So, I didn't think anything bad of it at all. And also, I would say when he came in to the game, I don't think a lot of people may have been throwing some caution about that previous game, but I don't think anybody was really expecting what happened to happen with him. But anyway, I mean, who knows? People will always kind of revise their how they thought about the decision at the time.
Yeah. So I think part of it was who was coming up to the plate, which is why a lot of people, were very nervous about Luke Jackson coming in the game. Because that was Chris Taylor, Cody Bellinger, and AJ Pollock, who were just tearing up the Braves in this series to that point.
I would just quickly rebut with that. It's like, would you rather have Jackson pitch to the top of the Dodgers order?
So I understand Braves fans who were like, these guys had been tearing up the Braves to this point. However, I would say, look at the stretch over 161 games of how Luke Jackson looked, and the fact that pitchers have bad performances and do stuff, and I know it's happened more often than not with Luke Jackson, which is how he's gotten the name 77 and that sort of thing, especially at our radio station. So I didn't necessarily hate throwing him out there. I would also say managers do make mistakes.
Yeah.
And part of it is maybe that's actually a good thing that happened in this moment. So Brian Snicker can get the old ways that he's used to, which he did a lot of new things. He did a lot of things that we wouldn't expect him to do, but he still held on to, I want to have my guy in 7, 8, and 9, and it didn't work out. And so maybe that causes him to rethink, and it's a positive thing. I'm going to, add this little positive spin onto heading into the World Series. It's also just great that it didn't ultimately cost the Braves. And I mean, that's the best part of it.
To reinforce your point, I want to say, you can absolutely learn from these situations. If the Braves are in the same exact position in a potential World Series clinching game against the Astros, maybe Brian Snicker does bring out Matzik for that seventh inning and say, okay, well, if he gets through the seventh clean, then we can throw him back out there again for the eighth if he's on, a low pitch count and all that stuff. Because remember the Brewers series in game one, he leaves Charlie Morton out there to go throw the seventh inning. Charlie Morton gives up the home run, is put in almost the same exact position in the next game, in game two, with Max Fried, and decides to make the pitching change, which turned out to be the right call, where they would go on to win that game. So, yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I think there are things you can learn. It's not about, bashing somebody for making a certain decision. It's, can you learn from that situation, and then maybe it improves your decision-making the next time something like that comes around.
Yeah, well, and it's also one of those things that it's just one of the few missteps that was made in this series. If out of the things that I could truly blame Brian Snicker for, this was one of them for sure. But there's not that many.
I know there's not. Yeah.
When you look across the field at all of the nonsense that Dave Roberts got this Dodger team into, and for anyone who's because the narrated part of this now is changed to, the Dodgers were just so beat up, and it's like, I'm sorry, did you see the Braves roster at the beginning of the season to where it is now? So of course, the narrative is going to change that it is, the Dodgers were truly beat up, but a lot of it was Dave Roberts just out here grasping at straws, making up stuff, and making a lot of bad decisions that did not work out for his Dodgers team.
Yeah, so many. I mean, we could go through all of them, but yeah, I think we can just kind of summarize it by saying that whatever qualms you may have with Brian Snicker making a certain decision here or there with a pitcher, Luke Jackson in this case, he was the better manager in this series. And I think that he's been one of the best managers of any team in this postseason. I just think that he's pulled the right move on so many occasions. He deserves a ton of credit for it, not just him, but really the whole staff. I tend to think that Walt Weiss is like doing a lot of the kind of whispering in his ear, like, yeah, you know, like some suggestions maybe that Brian Snicker appreciates. And it's just a tremendous coaching staff overall. So you got to give credit to all of them. But I mean, it's certainly been a very well-managed postseason overall by Brian Snicker.
Is there anything as a part of this game that you want to get to that we haven't talked about?
Well, Matzik comes in and just mows down pretty much everybody in his way. That was just unbelievable. You talk about postseason pitching performances that live in memories, and it's usually starters. You know, it's usually Tom Glavine going 8 innings in Game 6 of the 95 World Series that clinched it. And certainly we hope that there is something like that in store for the Braves in this World Series as well. But I think that that performance from Tyler Matzik is one of the rare relief pitching performances that is going to really live in the memory banks of Braves fans. Like, nobody's going to forget that. And we talked about AJ Minter having gone through the mental wars. Nobody's gone through mental wars like Tyler Matzik, who was out of baseball with the yips, literally had just like mental issues and couldn't. He had like Mark Wohler syndrome, apparently, if anybody remembers that, where he was like all of a sudden was not able to throw strikes. Tyler Matzik was playing independent ball with like the Air Hogs somewhere in the Dallas area. A matter of, you know, a few years ago. It was not that long ago that he was there. And I think it was Kyle Wright who told a story about when the Braves signed him and he came to Gwinnett. Everybody saw him throw and was like, holy crap, this guy has an arm. everybody was just blown away by him because he was a high pedigree guy. He was a first round pick by the Rockies when Walt Weiss was there with that organization. So just like a really kind of amazing confluence of events that led him to become an Atlanta Brave, and then to kind of have your climax, for lack of a better word, in that moment was amazing. It was just a kind of a storybook moment for him and for Braves fans to be able to get out of that jam without giving up any damage was truly incredible. And I think it really gave everybody like a nice kind of more of a joyride for the ninth inning, honestly, when Will Smith came in and he had a little bit of a cushion to work with. And obviously they did it. And when everybody saw Freddie Freeman raise his hands when he caught that ball, it was just like a symbol. It was like symbolic of the euphoria that I think everybody was feeling.
Yeah. You talk about Matzik, and one of the coolest things about all of this is just the fact that his story gets to be told. Because, I mean, this could have... There are so many players like Tyler Matzik who had really good stuff, went through something, and it just wasn't the same after that. But a lot of those guys don't get the redemption story of coming back. And not only just being a part of the bullpen and being a guy who fills innings, but a like massive reason as to why the Braves are in this point. Because if Tyler Matzik comes in that seventh inning the way that Luke Jackson had left it, that is game-ending stuff right there. Mm-hmm. That is Dodgers take the lead and don't look back. And oh no, we're headed to a game 7, and I was one who was like, I have zero confidence in a team, and a Braves team to win a game 7. So I think that's just what makes it that much sweeter is the pressure, because I was one, and I tweeted out after he left that eighth inning that he was a guy that I had been saying all season, love his stuff. Love his story. He's a great guy. Just don't put him in any pressure situations.
Right. Yeah.
Because I don't think he's going to come through. I think he's a little too flaky for me. And I don't like a guy who has been through that coming in high pressure situations, because I just wonder about whether you go back to old habits and kind of crumble under the pressure. And to me, he said, "What a moron," and showed me up. And I like, that is, you know, there are moments, of course, where you love to be absolutely wrong. 100% loved being wrong in that moment, just because of how emphatic it was and how it's like, all right, I absolutely have to rethink this. And he is a guy that I think the Braves could potentially lean on even more next season. I think he's going to stay in his position this year just because of that's they've gotten to this point, kind of working it. Maybe they lean on him more and he does some seventh and eighth inning work. But it just, I don't know. It's hard to say more.
It's hard not to like want to use a guy like that in more, you know, give him more opportunities, put him in more high leverage opportunities, you know, just because he has been so dominant. Like, he came into that situation and almost threw an immaculate inning, like, yeah, from having runners on second and third and none outs. I think he threw two balls in that whole sequence to get it before the end of the inning.
And I say all that to say that, like, one thing that I think will be, that is slightly disappointing, is the fact that the photos that are going to get circulated and that have been circulated from the Braves clinching is Will Smith. It's like, I mean, as much as, yes, Will was the last one to be out there, he made it happen, he didn't crumble under the pressure. It was just like, oh man, no, I really, if there's going to be any embracing photos or, you know, those exciting kind of defining the series, I kind of wish it would have been Matzik, just because of how much he held up his end of the deal.
The Braves put out some video, or at least one video of him, just kind of like the celebration of him having the final strikeout in that seventh inning. And I think it was Eric O'Flaherty, who's Dave O'Brien's co-host on the 755 is Real podcast on The Athletic, said, he tweeted out, it was like, you know, what must it be like to feel like this? You know, yeah, when he's just like screaming into the air with, and like you see all the fans stand up and go nuts at the same time. Like, man, talk about a dopamine rush, an adrenaline rush, all that stuff at one time. I mean, what an insane feeling. And by the way, Tyler Matzik would be the last one who would like be like pointing out his story and like how far he came. Like, yeah, his whole thing when he, like, all he was talking about after the game was just like, just wanted to pick up Luke, like, you know, because like people have done it for me. That's like, all these guys care about each other so much, you can kind of get wrapped up in this flowery language about teammates and the brotherhood and all that kind of stuff, but there really does seem to be something different about this team, and especially this bullpen, but the entire team in general. I think it is because they've hit so many roadblocks throughout the season, because a lot of them are not star players in this league. Some of them who are kind of having this kind of success for the first time, it's like they all appreciate where they are right now. And I think that they all understand that the reason that this team is in the World Series is because they got there together. It wasn't like some, you know, one or two or three players who were kind of carrying everybody through. It was the collection of everybody working together and kind of ham and egging it through this thing to get them all this success. So it's just a great kind of team vibe right now that they have going. And I think that kind of thing can really carry you at this time of year.
One of my favorite things that I've been watching the last couple of days since the Braves clinched is the on-the-field videos of whether it's Freddie and Snit getting together for a big embrace. I saw one yesterday that was Adam Duvall holding his son, who sees Blooper from across the field, and Blooper comes over and picks him up and then just like walks off with him. All of the celebration videos. And then I've also seen on TikTok some of the fan celebrations. Sure, there is fans in the stadium. Incredible. Getting to hear Mark Owens when I was watching the TV broadcast and his excitement was a lot of fun. But just getting to see like regular Braves fans who were like me sitting on the couch. Well, I was not sitting. I was very much pacing. Yes, definitely pacing
around the couch.
Yeah, because I told Thomas Mott earlier that day when we were doing our show together that it was like, look, I've got a pit in my stomach that's not going away until they finish this thing. And I'm optimistic, you know, I at least I can be, but it was, this is not real until the final out. And so to see, I saw one guy who was in his recliner and like literally was struggling to get up. Like he was just wanting to jump up and just the pure excitement. You talk about the Freddy raising his hands, and like that is a photo that will be framed in people's, you know, man caves and dens. I'm sure, if not already, will be, especially depending on what happens in this upcoming series. But
there was a great watch party outside the stadium too, in the Battery. Absolutely, that was really cool to see. It reminded me of like a World Series or like a World Cup or something. You know, when you have like those like big outdoor watch parties, really cool. I'm sure that being part of that would have been just as or more exciting than being in the stadium as well. Just kind of whenever you're just around that many people who are all feeling the same thing, there's just that electricity that's going through everybody. That is, it's like you don't get that many opportunities to experience that kind of thing in your life.
Yeah, absolutely. For me, there was a little bit of like, I was glad I was alone, because you know there might have been a little coming up,
getting a little dusty in there.
Yeah, exactly. You know, of just because I think it's just for so many Braves fans and just Atlanta fans in general, this idea of not knowing if getting to this point was really going to be possible or if it was just going to be something else. And so, Joe Patrick, it is now real. We can talk about the fact that tomorrow night at 8:09, the Atlanta Braves will be in Houston to face the Astros, a team who not so long ago had their World Series hopes taken away from them by a National League team, that time the Dodgers. How are you feeling just in general about the Braves? You know, chances here.
Well, first of all, I got to say that, you know, I think that the Braves are going to be America's team. If they weren't already, I think that the Braves are definitely America's team for this series because of, you know, all the reasons, or maybe one huge gigantic reason that everybody hates the Astros, that everybody that doesn't live in the Houston area or is from the Houston area. So I think that there will be a lot of people rooting for the Braves kind of organically around the country, even though they're, you know, they might not have any actual Braves allegiance or anything. But that always makes you feel good to have that kind of momentum behind your organization. But, you know, going into the series, I'm kind of split, like I'm kind of torn between two feelings, which is one, obviously wanting to cap all the glory that we just talked about for 45 minutes with a, you know, a World Series, you know, with just kind of like a happy ending. You want to see your team win the whole thing. You know, you just want to see them do that. If it ends in heartbreak, it's going to really obviously put a damper on everything that we just talked about. But at the same time, I can't help but feel like that's like an element of like house money that this team is playing with right now. And maybe it's just the feeling of that they're kind of going to be buoyed by having such a series win over the Dodgers, that's going to kind of lift them up in this series. But I just do feel a sense of confidence with this team heading into it. And especially when you look at game one with Charlie Morton going up against Framber Valdez, who's probably their best pitcher this season overall. Like I know he has the lowest FIP of anybody on the team. But, you know, the Braves have a clear advantage in this series in the starting rotation. And I feel like something that has to happen for the Braves in this series is they have to actually take advantage of that. Like in the Dodgers series, I think they also had a starting rotation advantage, but they were never really able to take advantage of it. Like they just didn't, you know, Charlie Morton was never at his best during the series. Max Fried, you know, really struggled, obviously, out there in L.A. You just didn't really take advantage of that like you could. In fact, the Braves, you know, won a bullpen game when they were going up against, you know, who was it that was going for the Julio Urias in that game. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think both teams felt like they didn't really take advantage of some times in the that they had in the series. But I think going into the World Series, you're going up against an AL team that is just a league where you're gonna, you know, you're scoring more runs. You've got a DH. The Braves will obviously be playing with those rules in these first two games, but you're playing against a team that is probably the best offensive team that you've played in this postseason. I would even say better than the Dodgers, because of the way that some of the Dodgers were struggling with injuries and things like that. This is going to be a very tough out, but you have to take advantage of this strength that you have in the starting rotation, and that obviously starts in game one, where you have one of the best postseason pitchers in history and Charlie Morton going out. And if he can put you on the right track, you know, give you a good start to the series, then I think that obviously puts you in a great position to win the thing, considering that you don't have home field advantage.
Yeah, so I did misspeak, and it was bothering me the whole time you were going. That the Astros lost to the Nationals, like that was 2019, the year. was the year that like the Nationals were the team who really weren't supposed to be there.
Right,
you know, it's one of those like sound familiar, and who had some really impressive starting pitching in that series.
Yeah, there you go.
And so having that in mind, like that is, I mean, that's obviously a lot of the optimism that I fall back onto. And then also, yeah, I think this lines up perfectly with getting Charlie Morton in game one of this series. And he, like, getting to face your former team counts for something. I know if you were to ask Charlie about it, he'd be very calm and, you know, oh, you know, he's a great guy. And,
Charlie Morton is.
Exactly. Yeah. He would find some 5-minute answer to say how facing his former club doesn't really mean anything. But I think there's two things going here for Charlie, in that getting to finish what you started in your career with the Braves, I think, matters for something. And then to go against your former club, there's going to be something about like just trying to perform and also knowing the competition really well, just from being around those guys and just, I don't know, any little thing that you can get out of that. I feel like it seems to be an advantage. And also, it comes at a great time because the Braves need to start off, especially on the road, getting this first one.
And I would just say, from more of a technical standpoint, it looked like he had figured something out in the last start that he made against the Dodgers, which got off to a really rough start. You know, he was actually lucky to make it through one of the first or second inning there, where he was like really getting into trouble. But he did seem to figure something out and was able to command his fastball in particular a lot better later on in that start. And sometimes that's how it goes with pitchers. Like, there's like some little mechanical thing that is causing you to you know, your fastball command to kind of break down. But if you can fix that little thing, then all of a sudden it kind of comes back, kind of like a golfer or something, you know, because it is a very mechanical, motion that they make, you know, in their delivery. So you hope that could be something that kind of gives him some momentum coming into the start tonight or tomorrow night. He will be on an extra day of rest, so that also you would think has got to help. Honestly, when it comes to these Brave starters, there's not a lot of excuses or anything. Like, they should be the better pitchers for these teams. I think the only question, you know, you're just going up against a really tough lineup, so it's like, how well can you hold them down? But it's hard to like predict exactly what's going to happen, especially just coming off that Dodgers series with these starts. I think none of them kind of went how we would have predicted them when they started. So you just kind of hope that a guy like Charlie can come in with his best stuff, and you have to have faith that if he does, then you're gonna have a great chance to win that ball game.
I'm trying to look here. One thing that's been very interesting about the Astros in their postseason success, and this kind of goes with a bit of that National League versus American League, whereas, you know, National League, you think of better pitchers getting much tighter games. The Astros have been scoring a ton of runs.
Yeah.
Just, in their entire series. I mean, they had a 12-run game against the Red Sox. They had a 10-run game against the White Sox. Like, it's just, they are scoring in bunches. A lot of 9-run games against the Red Sox. Do you think that changes at all because they'll essentially be facing what we assume to be better pitching? Or is this a type of series that you think could fall into, we're going to get some big scoring games?
Well, no, I mean, I think the higher scoring the games are, this is not causal, but it is. I think we are likely to see some correlation here, where if the games are higher scoring, that will inevitably favor the Astros. I think that, you know, they're going to be more likely to win games if they are higher scoring. If the games are lower scoring, I think that, you know, that would be the Braves will end up winning those. Again, it's not causal.
Sure.
It's not like if you hold them low, but like, yeah. So I think that, you know, if you're the Braves, I think you have to go in with the mentality to just try to limit, you know, obviously you never want to go into a game like expecting like, all right, well, we'll just score 9 runs tonight and we'll win this game. But I certainly think that it will go in the Braves' favor if they can limit just the runs that are scored in general and keep these things a little bit tighter, a little bit lower scoring. You know, honestly, sometimes those kinds of games can amp up tension on teams, especially if they start getting frustrated at the plate. So I certainly think that that's something to kind of watch out for in this series overall, is just the scores of the games. If they're higher scoring, that's going to favor the better offensive team, which in this case is the Houston Astros.
Something that the Astros had to deal with this last series, like they had Nathan Eovaldi, who, I mean, in my opinion, was just pitching lights out all season, especially into the postseason. They were able to overcome that, but I just wonder the difference in not only what the Braves can send out starters wise but the fact that, you know, Tyler Matzek and Will Smith and those guys are AJ Minter are able to show up in relief as well. Where's the one concern for you for the Braves in this series?
For the Braves, I hate to like kind of really drop it all on one player in particular, but it really is kind of what we were talking about earlier with Luke Jackson. And can he bounce back? Because in general, he has been the one right-handed arm that the team has been able to rely on this season out of the bullpen. And if he all of a sudden, you know, there's like a head case, you know, thing going on with him, and you don't really have that kind of reliable right-hand arm, that's going to become a big issue for you, especially because you no longer have Oscar Yanoa, who we'd also kind of penciled in as being a guy who can come in relief and get you big strikeouts and things like that. Now, granted, a guy like Tyler Matzek is probably a guy at this point who you don't care who he's facing. He's going to be pretty devastating against anybody, but I think that for me, that's probably the clearest kind of fear that I have for this Braves team is, can Luke Jackson get back on track? Because if Luke Jackson gets back on track, if he gets himself sorted out, once again, you have a great assortment of bullpen options there, especially with the way that Minter has clearly been able to step up his game. With Minter, Matzek, Jackson, and Will Smith all being at their best, I think you have four guys who are would be able to pitch for you pretty much every single night, like Brian Snicker had been using them. And again, kind of combining them with the starting pitching advantage you have, I think that that would allow you to, you know, defend yourself against this Houston offense as best you can. So I think that's the biggest question mark I have going in. Oh, and I should mention, by the way, when I was talking about the Astros starting pitching and Framber Valdez kind of being their best pitcher, you know, Lance McCullers has been obviously one of their big guys this year, but his health is in question. He might not be at his best. So that's kind of one of the reasons he already in my mind is kind of taking a notch down a little bit in terms of what I expect out of him in this series.
The Braves are going to end up having more American League games where they're going to have a designated hitter. Is it kind of, I mean, I've heard a lot of conversation of, based on how everything has happened, is it just a no-brainer that you DH Juan Soto, or do you...
Jorge Soler?
Yes,
I would love one. Thank Soto.
If we get... Wow. Yeah. Caleb, get
same initials.
Up. Yeah.
JS.
Exactly. But yes, do you designate Jorge Soler in that DH spot over mixing something up and trying to get the Jocktober that had really helped the Braves in a pinch hitting role? Do you swap that?
Well, I think Soler is the clear guy you're going to insert into the lineup with a DH involved. I think the biggest question marks around this are First of all, if you slot in Jorge Soler, is he going to be your DH, or do you actually put him out there in right field in place of Jock Peterson?
Yeah, that's what I'm asking.
Yeah, who's better defensively? I don't know at this point, and I do think that the COVID situation with Soler throws a little extra question mark into this, which is like, do you want somebody who's coming off of that to be out there on their feet for a long time in a game? And I'm not saying that like COVID would affect him in a way that like he wouldn't be able to do that, but I'm just saying, like, as somebody who's probably been off of his feet for the better part of a week, you know, just, you know, cooped up, you know, is that something that kind of enters your mind? I don't know. It's, again, it's a question mark. We just don't know. Maybe it helps him, like, having been off his feet. Maybe he's got like an extra spring in his step out there. We just don't know. But I think that that's one of the question marks. If I was going to throw out one, I would say put Jorge Soler out there in right field. That's just me. And then I think obviously the other question is, where, if Jorge Soler is coming into this lineup, how do you then construct the lineup? Because Jorge Soler was having so much success as the leadoff hitter for this team the last 3 or 4 weeks of the season. And I think the nice thing about Eddie Rosario is that he has not just like had to be slotted in this leadoff spot, and that's kind of been where he's derived all this success from. Like, he's batted first, he's batted fifth in this postseason. Like, he's kind of batted all over the place. Mm-hmm. I don't think that that's going to affect him at all. And so I do like Soler at the top of this lineup still, especially if you're going up against a lefty. I think that the most likely thing is that if you're facing a lefty, you're going to see Jorge Soler batting leadoff, and Eddie Rosario probably move down to fifth in the lineup, hitting behind Austin Riley as a lefty going after, so you can get the lefty-righty. Or righty-lefty, like in the Braves lineup at that point. And then vice versa. If you're going up against a righty, you'll probably have Soler batting leadoff, or Rosario batting leadoff, and Soler batting lower in the order. So, yeah, I don't know. What are your thoughts on this?
So, I would love if in a perfect scenario, if Juan Soto had been dealing with...
Jorge Soler.
Wow. I can't get this out of my head.
Love Juan Soto.
I know. Man, I'm being very optimistic today, I guess. Look, my mind is thinking Jorge Soler is going to play like Juan Soto. There we go.
There you go.
But if Jorge Soler was dealing with some type of physical injury that, you know, was just something like a little tweak or something like that, I don't know. I'd feel so different than dealing with COVID and now knowing what we know, which is Jorge Soler has been dealing with COVID unvaccinated, which, look, this is just Caleb's opinion. I think it affects people who haven't been vaccinated worse. I think a lot of doctors would say that, too.
He also said he never had symptoms.
Okay. I still just wonder about how those things linger around, and if there's zero performance issues, I absolutely want Jorge Soler out in the outfield and playing, and then let Jock Peterson DH, just because it's seemed like not that there's been any issues with Jock in the outfield, but just it seemed like that Jocktober, that emphatic power that he's had has come in those pinch hitting situations, which you would get more often as a designated hitter. If there is any lingering issues that the Braves trainers are worried about, then 100% put him in the designated hitter position, because I still think he's a better hitter at, what, 75% or whatever number you want to stick on him than the other Braves bats would be as a DH. But it's just, this is when it becomes those tough decisions to make. And it's also very possible that we get a look in game one and game two that if this thing pushes further, that maybe if the designated hitter comes back around, you see something completely different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I think that it's not something that will be set in stone like right now. I think that it's something that they'll probably assess kind of day to day. Brian Snicker was kind of joking about lineup decisions and things like that last week, and he was like, I wake up in the morning without a thought in my mind.
I love that.
I know.
Something. One other thing that could get overlooked in this. Well, it's going to get talked about. is just the fact of how interesting is it that you're getting old school manager versus old school manager. You're getting Brian Snicker versus Dusty Baker, not these new analytic guys, which I can tell you right now with Joe Buck and John Smoltz, we are not going to hear the end of the fact that non-analytic guys are managing the World Series, and we're going to get so much back in my day and how I would have done it and yada yada.
Which is not even really the truth. We talked about this during the season when that Sports Illustrated article came out, which I, again, highly recommend to anybody to go read because it's an amazing story. But the headline says something like, he's old school, he doesn't do analytics, he does it his own way or whatever, which is like not the case. Like they provide us, the thing is with Snit, they provide him with everything. They provide him with all the analytics. It's just his decision as to what to do with that information, and they don't push him on it. So it's not like somebody above him is making decisions for him, but they clearly get the point across of like what certain numbers show in certain situations, but then they just give him the autonomy, and he does definitely take that stuff into account. Like, he's not brushing it aside and telling, you know, Alex Anthopoulos and his team to like go shove it or anything. So I mean, there will be a lot made about that because they are kind of the archetypes in this game of the just the aesthetic of Dusty Baker and Brian Snicker, and two guys that are kind of beloved in the baseball world, so you feel happy for them for that reason too. And I think that it makes for kind of a it's kind of perfect mix for Major League Baseball, I think. I think they appreciate having those kinds of managers that a certain kind of portion of their fan base really likes to see alongside this kind of new dynamic style of baseball that's being played out there. So it should be a great series. I'm really looking forward to it. Caleb, I'm also looking forward to bringing this show to the air. After games, people listen to the two of us on 92.9 The Game doing these kinds of reaction shows that we've been doing for the road games. We'll be doing them on 92.9 The Game. I've been told that they will also be streamed here on Facebook Live. So if any of our Facebook Live listeners would prefer just to keep listening to us here or watching us after the fact, the recorded videos on here, those will be there for them, but we'll also be on the air in the studio.
I was about to say, well, you know, it's one of those, if you just don't want to look at us, you know, if you just want to turn on the radio, I don't blame you. And you know, maybe that's the way to go.
I've got a big pimple coming in, which usually happens around major life events like weddings and covering the World Series. So, maybe radio will be best.
A lot of stressful, you know, rubbing of the face. Yeah.
No, that's probably what it is. Honestly,
That's why, you know, I got the beard in here to kind of cover it up. But yeah, no, that it'll be really... Look, this is an exciting time, not only for Atlanta fans, but us too as media in this city. To get these opportunities, they just don't come around all the time. And so like Joe was saying, check out our coverage that we'll have post game, of course, on 92.9. and Joe is telling us we're going to be doing Facebook Live stuff too, so it's going to be some late nights, but we hope you'll stay up with us and give us your insight, anything that you know you may be wanting to talk about. I know I'll try to have my phone up.
We'll take questions. Absolutely. We'll be taking callers as well, I believe. So
there we go. It'll be nice to be on the opposite end of that, Joe Patrick, rather than the one that's usually taking the calls and sending them
the other side of the glass.
Exactly. So it's a fun experience. Like we said, game one tomorrow night on my parents' anniversary, of all things. So shout out to Jeff and Stephanie, who are going to be celebrating, I don't know, a long time of
maybe they'll have a little
tomorrow.
Extra to celebrate tomorrow.
That is what I'm hoping, as Charlie Morton is going to face Framber Valdez out in Houston. Thank you for everybody watching on Facebook Live, and of course, everyone who is going to listen to this posted later on Odyssey or wherever you get your podcast. For my co-host, Joe Patrick, I'm Caleb Johnson. This has been Batter Up.